Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Hey kids, just a reminder, if you like what we do here at Shake Them Ropes, click on that link in the description, the red circle, and click the tip jar and throw us a buck or two, because we ain't doing live reads anymore and we ain't volunteers. If you don't like what we do here, forget I said anything. Now, Shake Them Ropes, which you don't like what we do here, which is weird.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling too. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. If I sound a little different or you hear some grinding in the back, I am live from Park MGM in Las Vegas, across the street from the MGM Grand, where Double or Nothing will be taking place this weekend. Big fan of Park MGM, Chris, because it's the only smokeless hotel on the strip.
Oh.
You know, so not everything smells like 20-year-old cigarettes, but I've already had a problem today in that I get to my room and immediately housekeeping goes, oh yeah, there needs to be an engineer, come in there and check the lights. It's like, check the lights, all the lights seem to be working, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Engineer comes in. He has to replace fuses in those, you know, those nightstand lamps with like the USB ports next to the bed.
Sure.
Neither of those things are working. This becomes a 20, 25-minute ordeal, and I've just gotten off the plane. I just kind of want to take a nap, blah, 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 blah. It's coming in and out. And very nice, though. Gave me a voucher for some food later. That's cool for them. But he gets done, and he leaves. And I'm like, I'm finally, get a little, take the clothes off, go for a nap, blah, blah, blah. Doom, doom, doom. Wait, what? Who is it? I go, another guy from engineering. Hey, I need to check the lights out. No, you don't. He just fixed them. Oh, he fixed them? Yeah, get out of here. So if I've already had an adventure here.
Nice. Nice.
Anything you want to talk about right now before we get into the graps?
Not particularly.
Not particularly. Chris,
no.
We're gonna turn that frown upside down, Chris Novembrino.
There are just Are you familiar with the song by Ben Folds called Narcolepsy?
I am not, because I don't listen to Ben Folds.
Okay, it's a good song, and I like it a lot. Like, lyrically, it's a good song where it's not about actually not being able to sleep or whatever, or sleepwalking. It's more of like this idea that there are points in your life where you're kind of just like sort of half awake, half asleep, and just making your way through seemingly weeks and or months at a time.
I call that my 30s, Chris.
Yes.
And part of my 40s.
I am deeply in one of those right now, and there are many days where I'm able to pull it all together, and today is not one of those days, and we're going to get through this podcast.
Let's start with the news. AEW All Out pay-per-view will be moved from Sunday, September 1st to Saturday, September 7th now, moving away from the usual Labor Day weekend because, well, back-to-back pay-per-views on weekends and international touring, probably a bit much. I don't know, Chris. I don't like this because the Wembley show is a bank holiday in England. Labor Day weekend's a good enough travel weekend for people if they wanted to come into Chicago and do it. My thing is they have a big enough roster where you could build two actually great pay-per-view cards and make them equally good if you had the skill to do that. How do you feel about All Out not being back-to-back with All In. I think overall, it's a smart move, but I would just move All Out to a totally different month/week or whatever, as opposed to just the next week.
Yeah, I don't think they need to be connected other than the fact that they've created a branding that suggests that In and Out follow each other sequentially or have some sort of narrative significance. Well, so they've done that with the branding, but they've never really done that with the writing too much. And they certainly don't seem like they're on track to do that this year. So
these AEW big time pay-per-views used to be travel shows. So, I mean, the Labor Day weekend when you could fly in, and now they're moving it to week one of college football on that Saturday. And also opening week of the NFL, which is Sunday. I think they're going to have worse competition and worse numbers than you normally have not being on Labor Day this year.
No, I'm with you. It seems to me, especially for wrestling, August is actually an ideal month for them to try to have a big event, right? There's no football going yet. There's baseball, but baseball's kind of in the dog days of August. It's actually the crappiest part of the baseball schedule.
Yeah, there's preseason football in August, not like real football.
No, and yeah, right. That's like barely relevant unless you're like a hardcore lifer for your team or whatever. That's not necessarily a major draw on that. And you don't have basketball going at that point, and there's no major national holidays. To me, for the middle of the year, August is a great target schedule, or late July as well. Like this would be when you'd want these events happening, not necessarily right in September. That first few weeks of September is a real train wreck of sports. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, baseball playoffs getting into swing. Yeah,
right.
Or at least, you know, the
end
the
of regular
stretch.
Season where yeah. Shit actually starts mattering again.
Yeah, and then you have the opening of both. You have NFL, NHL, and NBA. I would move All Out to like August. I think that's a good call on your part. I mean, especially since WWE.
Is there a worse month for sports than September in the sense of just density?
No.
Right? That's peak sports. Yeah. That's peak sports. I mean, even though we think of the Super Bowl, but like peak sports is September.
Right. Well, Stephen Borden, the son of Sting, who played the Wolfpack Sting at Revolution, is training. Speaking with Fightful Sean Ross Sapp, Darby Allin said that Steven, a former football player, was staying at his house and training to be a pro wrestler. He noted that Steven was sleeping in a tent in his front yard. Allin noted that Steven had not thought about getting into wrestling, but getting involved at AEW Revolution gave him the urge to train. The former TNT champion said that he spoke with Sting and Steven and invited Steven to come train with him. Allin also said he has a ring at his house to help him with the process. So we may get baby Sting sooner than later, Chris.
Yeah, and I hope that Borden mans up, apologizes to Darby Allin, and can get out of this tent in the front yard situation that he seems to have found himself in. This is part of personal growth. Being a great wrestler is not just about physique, but it's also about character, and I think this is a tremendous opportunity for Borden to turn a corner.
Let me ask something. Is he doing this tent thing, you know, the whole, I gotta be hungry, I'm a child of privilege in some way, so I need to learn how to struggle a little bit? I mean, I heard.
Well, I think it's all big talk in May, right? Let's do this tent thing in November or December up in Minnesota.
Well, I think Darby's in Washington.
It's still May.
I know. I don't look at. Well, yeah. Well, Minnesota isn't Washington, though, so, I mean,
there's a time of year component of this, and then there's a geography component of this, Jeff. It's a two-legged stool. It needs both legs to make sense, just like a stool.
It makes no sense that he can't just live in Darby's house in a guest room or something.
It does if he was being a jerk. You got to be nice to people.
I gotta learn how to be hungry again. I'm just gonna eat nothing but ramen. And although I've done that before, so maybe there's something to that.
I mean, Borden should only be allowed to eat what he kills.
Cans of tuna and orange juice. That's it.
Okay, fine. He should get bottles of water so that he has good, clean water. But otherwise,
a bucket to piss in.
Yeah, Darby Allin should require Borden to go out into the woods of Washington, fashion his own weapons.
Find wild boars and Bigfoot.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's deer out there too. I mean, like the man needs to learn how to get back in contact with nature, just like the Sting character was classically known for. As we know, Sting lived in the woods and lived off of wild hare and deer for many years, from 1988 to 1991.
Eddie Kingston's leg injury is going to be a bad one. He's expected out until May 2025. He banged his leg pretty hard at a New Japan Strong show at the end on a table. Was able to walk to the back, but it looks like he's broken his leg and he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, May 2025 is almost a year from now.
Yes. Legs and knees take a long time to heal. I think he also put ACL in there, so.
Yeah, no, that's a long time.
Thank you, Captain Obvious. On May 21st, it was announced that Julia had suffered a fractured wrist and would be out indefinitely. Following the news breaking, blah, blah, blah. Okay, sorry. I got this drill from Fightful Select.
here's the thing. Julia Hart could use, like, magic powers in her matches.
No, this is Julia from Stardom.
Oh.
WWE remains hopeful that Julia will be healed in time for NXT Heatwave, where she is expected to be the opponent for Roxanne Perez.
Okay.
Numbers Collision did 523,000.15 Sunday night, beat everything in the time slot on cable but the NHL playoffs, fifth overall. Rampage also up 391,000, also beating everything in the time slot but NHL. SmackDown 2.186 million viewers, Raw 1.8 million viewers, and last night's Dynamite Go Home show up a little bit, 713,000 viewers on TBS, up 6.1% from the previous week. It's the largest audience the show has done since April 17th, a month and a half. Dynamite averaged a 0.24 rating in the 18 to 49 demo. Chris, any thoughts?
I mean, it's the go-home show, but it still seems like the arc is going down, and this is just them kind of like getting, you know, having a nice little up week. But the Collision number's not bad, right? The Collision number is in the 500s. That's nice.
Yeah, no, the Collision and Rampage were back to back. I believe it was one of those Saturday night 3-hour blocks again, where they ran back to back, and they were up overall. There was nothing on other than hockey that night. So as the NBA dwindles down a bit,
that changes my analysis ever so slightly, in the sense that it's like. Oh, well, no, because, like, Rampage then would be an atrophy hour, right? Like, they started with 500,000, and they dropped into the 300s by the end of the show. So I don't think that's great.
Well, short news, because we're on kind of a short week. That'll do it for that. We now go to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we watched, whatever we had time for. Have a couple of pay-per-views we need to preview. But first, a new segment here on Shake Them Ropes, one I am excited about, because Chris and I get cranky at modern wrestling. So week to week, we're going to pick a match that both just gets us off, so to speak. And not in that way, Chris. Stop. Come on, be mature. Be mature.
Nailing this
open. You're a grown up. You're a 30.
No, this open, honestly, this is one of our strongest opens for any new segment
I think so too, yes.
We've ever debuted.
You know, Shake Them Ropes Theater is dead and gone for a while. So, you know, we need a new segment finally after 6 years.
we're going to be shaking something that gets us off
It's Hose Me Club or Vader Club. Jesus. We haven't decided yet. Okay. We haven't decided yet.
It can't be Hose Me Club. It's got to be Vader Club. It
has to be Vader Club? Well, it's not always going to be Vader. Yeah,
no. After that setup, it can't be Hose Me.
Okay, why not?
You really want me to break down? Okay.
Anyways, I watched Shinya Hashimoto versus Vader. Finals for the IWGP title. I believe 1989. Whew. This was like a 5 minute worth of wrestling, but like 13 minutes worth of pageantry. This match was awesome, Chris. I sent it to you. Watch it. Vader selling a hammerlock and just screaming obscenities in the middle of a crowd made it seem so real. And look, Vader never takes it easy on anybody. Shinya Hashimoto, I'm here for Fat Guy Karate. I love his entire look with the headband. And this is pre-headband though. But this almost, I mean, this was a life and death struggle for 5 minutes, grappling, beating the crap out of each other. Vader had the still has the steaming helmet at the time. Yep. He's doing, you know, I mean, this is a very young Leon White. It hit all my feels, because all I want is guys beating the crap out of each other sometimes. Almost got it with Satnam Singh versus Bryan Danielson in a way, even though that match wasn't great this week. But there's nothing quite like watching Vader stiff a guy, and the guy looks at him and stiffs him right back, and Vader's like, oh, I can't do that anymore. Highly suggest going out there and finding this. It's on Daily Motion, I know. Shinya Hashimoto versus Vader.
I'm certain I've watched it. I just didn't watch it this week.
No, that's fine.
This one definitely rings a bell. I mean, you know, this is Vader. In terms of his popularity, he was probably never more popular globally than around this period of time. The helmet and everything, and also the high-profile matches he was having in New Japan, had a real cultural saturation in Japan. And Vader ended up in a lot of different pieces of media, whether it was anime or video games. Like, he becomes sort of turned into a character on Capcom's Saturday Night Slam Masters as Jack the Greater. And that's just to name one. Like, this is peak Vader right here.
When you watch or listen to the crowd, man. This crowd is rabid. I mean, the crowds were rabid during, you know, that peak period around 2000, what is it, 12, 13, when Murr and stuff were there. This is almost like a Japan version of a Jim Crockett Promotions crowd. I mean, they are screaming and everything. They're not being polite. They are rowdy. Everything about this match, I just dug. But you pick a match next week and I'll watch it. How about that?
All right. We'll do it.
That way you get involved in this thing, so it's not all me.
That's fair.
So WWE, we're going to start an order, is in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for one of its two major PLEs there. This, the King and Queen of the Ring finals. SmackDown hasn't aired yet, so I don't know who's going to be the opponents in either the King or Queen of the Ring, but we can guess. But we will start with the King of the Ring finals. Gunther, the Raw winner of that bracket, beating Jey Uso, kind of surprisingly to me, will face the winner of Randy Orton and Tama Tonga. I assume this will be Randy Orton versus Gunther, which should be one entertaining match, but I have Gunther winning this overall.
I as well have Gunther winning this overall. Randy Orton does not need to be King of the Ring. It would only be something that they would do if MBS specifically requested it, because he wants to watch Randy Orton win while he's sitting in his box seat. That's the only thing that would maybe make me think Orton would win. But otherwise, to me, all the narrative suggests that Gunther's going to win this.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where he loses the Intercontinental title after breaking the record there, and he gets this. See, I would love it if I had faith in WWE to not make King of the Ring like King Booker or King Harley Race and just kind of camp, and they made it actually something serious, but I'm assuming we're getting a crown and a scepter and a thing for Gunther.
Possibly. I mean, we'll see. We'll see how I hope this does not result in him doing camp. My you know, positive outlook is that this is an unlosable title. So this is a nice way to heat him back up and get him going again. But then there is also the negative bearish outlook where he is King Gunther and he wears lederhosen and has a crown and a scepter. And Marcel Bartel comes out there and, like, rolls out a carpet for him every time.
Well, but this year at least, and I forgot about this because there is a caveat. They do get a world championship match of the winner's brand at SummerSlam.
Okay, there you go.
I had forgotten about that because I was so concentrated on the tournament and stuff. But I don't know. Maybe they ditch that. Maybe Randy Orton does win to go against Cody. But
now, I see this as Gunther versus Cody.
Oh, well, no, Cody's on SmackDown. Or no, he's on Raw. Never mind. I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, I think we're cruising to Gunther versus Cody. Gunther's
okay, yeah, that'll work.
Gunther's a major roadblock for Cody. You heat him up. That ultimately...
I'm kind of here for that match.
No, I know. What I'm actually here for is the Ludwig Kaiser versus Cody Rhodes main event on Raw.
Okay.
Like where Kaiser just has a really cool technical classic with Cody Rhodes that gets a little gritty.
On the women's side, Lyra Valkyria, the Raw winner, will face the winner of Nia Jax versus Bianca Belair.
I mean, I'm thinking Nia wins this. But like,
I'm thinking
like,
the SmackDown
Nia part. Nia wins the SmackDown part. Yeah, yeah. And then Lyra wins against Nia.
Really? So you're going to have both those matches on, and you're not going to do one of each?
One heel, one face.
Yeah, or one SmackDown, one Raw. Because I could see either Bianca or Nia versus Bayley as a match to build. Because we're currently in the midst of this Becky Lynch versus Liv Morgan.
You could have Nia win this, and she's the queen of the ring.
You see, it's weird because if you put Lyra versus Nia, I would want Lyra to go over, which is why I was thinking maybe Randy Orton pulls it out, and you do Randy versus. Who's the champion on SmackDown? I don't even watch it that much. Now, it would be Cody because Cody's the
unified champion. Yeah.
Yeah. So it would be so the match over on Raw would be Gunther versus, not Drew. No, Damian Priest.
I mean, that would be fine too.
I'm fine with that. Okay.
Yeah, and Priest is basically like a semi face, anyways, or.
God, so I can't believe I watch every week and all of this just goes through my head once I hit record on this show. But
Becky Lynch, you know, I had this like moment where I'd forgotten that Becky Lynch won the world championship a few weeks ago. Like,
well, you're about to be reminded because she's facing Liv Morgan on this card in a singles match for the women's world title. I don't think Liv Morgan has a chance, but I think she's the more interesting pick. I'm tired of the man, to be honest with you. I want to see Liv Morgan as a heel, as a champion now, taking everything that Rhea Ripley owns, including Dominic. But I think it might be too soon for that because she's not ready to come back. Who do you have?
I mean, I want Liv Morgan to win, too. I think she just gets better and better each week on the mic.
Yeah.
And she just becomes more and more of a presence.
She's making interesting choices in her acting. Let's put it that way, for me. I don't know about you, but I mean, she's a lot more confident as a heel.
Yeah.
She's not getting eaten alive by Becky on the mic as the man. And she's actually kind of throwing off Becky a little bit, which I like. It's making Becky work a little bit.
She seems older, wiser too. Like there's just like an aura of the naive Liv Morgan is gone. And like that's part of the heel turn too. I like this character a lot. I'm ready to see this character be a champion, and I'm kind of with you. Like, the man as champion has felt like a placeholder, and I actually think maybe it's a more interesting story for Rhea Ripley to come back whenever she comes back and discover that her entire empire has fallen.
Yeah,
and it now becomes the Rhea Ripley revenge tour.
She goes to the judgment, and there's Carlito. It's like, what are you doing here?
Yeah, right. Like Dominic's already involved with Liv and stuff. Like you know, maybe Liv shows up and starts doing things to get the Judgment Day back in order, and then slowly starts moving in on Dominic. And like by the time Rhea comes in,
am positive that's coming. I am positive Liv Morgan and Dominic are gonna be an on-screen couple.
Yeah. Oh man, the heat that those two are gonna get is gonna be incredible.
And what could be a show stealer? Sami Zayn versus Chad Gable with Otis versus Bronson Reed in a triple threat match for the WWE Intercontinental title. You know, I can see the writing on the wall here. And I think it's, you know, Otis cheats to help Gable get the title. And we continue with this abusive, abused relationship until it's time for Otis to finally turn on his master, so to speak. But I said this last week, and I don't want to repeat myself, but I'm going to. People want a Chad Gable babyface run. They want to root for Chad Gable. They don't want this abusive jerk thing. And I don't think Otis and Maxine Dupri are going to turn him back to the light side until Again, I still think the Creeds and Ivy Nile are going to be back in Gable sooner than later.
I think so, too. I think the Raw segment here this week belies that you're going to have the Creeds in with Gable, and Ivy Nile might be joining them as well. And so here's how I think this match is going to go. Chad Gable is going to try to get Otis to get involved, and Otis isn't going to do it. He's going to have the crisis of conscience in the match. Zayn's going to retain, and then next week on Raw, we're going to have the fallout where the Creeds come out and annihilate Tozawa and Otis and Maxine.
Okay. Well, maybe. Yeah, and then you'd always port Ilya onto Zayn. That would be a banger of a feud. I could see Gable having the Intercontinental title and saying no thanks to Otis, who did all the help, and then turning on him for the big beatdown, and now here's my new gang. But I'll go with the – I think I'm going to change my mind and go with you that Sami Zayn retains here, especially in Saudi Arabia.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, I know it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy slab packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to. Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club slab packs. They're better than those mystery packs because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club slab packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Yeah, I think Sammy retains. Otis, and Otis goes babyface, like chooses the light, and this is the feel-good match in this sense. I just want to say that I really like Bronson Reed's character now. I loved him just coming into Sami Zayn being like, you got all this personal stuff going on with Chad Gable, and I just want to remind you, I don't give a shit about any of it. I just want your title. I'm going to hurt you. The game was a great promo.
I will be very interested. How much of his culture he'll be able to show Sami Zayn, because he played it up last time quite a bit. I think, you know, I don't think we'll get a Syrian flag on Saudi Arabia soil, but I do think I think he's going to have this crowd behind him. Let's put it that way. And then to end this, sneaky, sneaky possible banger, Cody Rhodes versus Logan Paul for the undisputed WWE title. The build has been, you know, your typical Logan Paul and his stooges and his, you know, his energy drink and all that stuff build. But now it's time to go. And Logan Paul might be one of the worst human beings on planet Earth. But damn, do I enjoy his matches.
He's an entertaining spot monkey in these matches.
Yes.
And Cody's going to lead him through everything. And Cody will make sure that Logan Paul's high spots look great and that all of the necessary steps in between the high spots make sense. Logan Paul is more than competent enough to handle the punches, the kicks, and the requisite suplexes that Cody calls out for him. I think this will be a fantastic showcase of Cody Rhodes as a ring general. And Logan Paul,
this is Logan Paul's second. Go ahead. Sorry.
And Logan Paul will be a well-led horse throughout this match.
Yeah, this is Logan Paul's, I believe, second undisputed WWE title match in Jeddah. I think he also fought Roman Reigns in Saudi Arabia, if I don't misremember. But
and he's got a better match caller here with Cody Rhodes than he does with Roman Reigns. So I just think that you know what the level of quality is going to be on this match. And while there's no chance in hell Logan Paul is winning the title here in Saudi Arabia, I think it's still going to be a very entertaining title defense for Cody Rhodes. And I don't hate Logan Paul as one of his first challengers either.
Have you seen Tama Tonga and Tangaloa on SmackDown yet? Any of their vignettes or anything?
No, I have not.
Go out of your way to watch what Tama Tonga's doing, because he's basically doing Stripe from Gremlins. As a character. And I'm just like, I know some people are annoyed by that, but given the choice, I'd much rather him just being a grunting red shirt geek badass for Solo Sikoa than actually, you know, trying to be trying to create some weird talking character where he's doing bad WWE dinner theater promos. I don't know.
I think he was just better as Eyes Magoo doing like little turny head thing. Like that basically works well for him.
He's basically the psychotic hitman here. That's the thing he's playing here. Anything else from the main roster before we move on?
Not that I can think of, other than just the general comment that I continue to find Raw to be a more coherent and cohesive and enjoyable show from start to finish than like it was a year ago. This is just an entertaining show right now. Like,
yeah,
I like the backstage segments. I think most of them make sense. They add to the show. I like the woven together stuff where one thing flows into another thing. Sometimes it's a little hammy, but I think is general vibe. It's good. I like things like the little replays that they're doing before they're going to commercials. There's just a lot of new touches that have
been
added.
Some decent television in terms of just not just the music between the notes and doing, you know, having it flow a lot better as opposed to guy does dive. We'll be right back type of a thing. They're actually making it flow like a 3-hour TV show.
Yeah, what was the storyline this week where like they kind of launched it in like one of the first couple of segments and like they got the match going in the second hour? Like they basically kind of launched the storyline in show that paid off in show. Stuff like that has just made Raw so much more watchable than the McMahon era, where everything really was siloed off. Segment one didn't connect to segment two, which didn't connect to segment three, which didn't connect to segment four, unless it was like the big like authority storyline or something like that, where they needed multiple segments to tell the story they wanted to tell. Everything else was just siloed.
We can go through our Dynamite notes, or you know, if you watched Collision, I don't think you did. I didn't either, but we can go through the go home Dynamite notes as we move over to Double or Nothing live here in Las Vegas, Nevada on Sunday evening. Currently 10 matches announced. I assume that we're going to get 3 more announced for the pre-show, but since they haven't announced them yet, I can't preview them. We'll start off with Roderick Strong versus Will Ospreay, singles match for the AEW International title. I will say this, Chris. I liked the angle to start the show on Dynamite with the tag match and it breaking down. It was just the wrong place for it. I think this should have been the go-home angle for last week's Dynamite. And then you do the Darby reveal at the end of this week's Dynamite, where you run a story the entire time. Okay, who is Bryan Danielson going to be able to get as a fourth man type thing? I understand they were in Washington. I understand giving Darby the hometown pop. But this secondary feud, this mid-card, quote-unquote, main event, you end that on last week's show, and then you just give these two a couple of promos about how they're going to kill each other. I am more hyped for this match than doing all the stuff at the beginning of yesterday's show, and then it being kind of on the back seat compared to, you know, the main event of Anarchy in the Arena.
Well, yeah, I think you make a wonderful case for who's the fourth man being the final note on the go-home show, given what they chose to do as the go-home angle for the main event, right?
Well, like, we will get into that.
No offense to Satnam Singh, but Bryan Danielson versus Satnam Singh with Jeff Jarrett's random ass involvement in the go-home show. Like, this,
Jeff Jarrett's a saint, Chekhov's, and I will not hear otherwise.
Chekhov's Jarrett should not have been introduced.
Yeah, I just... Tony Khan fist bumped Darby with a flamethrower. We'll get to that. Let's hold off our snark about that. Timeless Toni Storm with Luther and Mariah May versus Serena Deeb in a singles match for the AEW Women's World Championship. Serena Deeb should sue AEW for career malpractice.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I think she just, this has just been a disaster, and she's not going
to
win.
Well, yeah, and she's the third woman they've now done this to, if you include Thunder Rosa and Deonna Purrazzo, where it's like your big heel your big heel, Toni Storm, is actually getting babyface cheers, so you decide to port the other three into mean babyfaces fighting her, sometimes heelish, whatever. Serena Deeb was doing so well with just those vignettes where I'm the professor, here's my dojo, and I'm coming back. And that's all she had to do. And just look at the title and just be the serious Serena Deeb she had been, and instead they're putting her in costumes and, you know, they're frilling her up and sports entertaining her.
Oh, my God. And this is so simple. Like, the obvious character foil to Timeless Toni Storm, yes, and her ham antics is Serena Deeb's Dean Malenko gimmick,
yes,
where she's the ice woman. She just comes out. She says nothing. She taps people. Maybe she gives quiet high fives as she's leaving just to make it clear that she's the baby face here, but there's no words. She just is there for the title. She's on a singular mission. It's no nonsense, like, and that's it. Instead, they have her telling this sob story. They have her trying out different outfits. Honestly, the weird thing is Toni Storm, who is a poser, feels like less of a poser than Serena Deeb, because Serena Deeb's obviously tryharding more than Toni Storm is. And I'm talking about a person who lives in black and white, or forces us to live in black and white with her when she's on camera. Like, Serena Deeb's the bigger tryhard. It's crazy.
Adam Copeland versus Malakai Black in a barbed wire steel cage match for the AEW TNT Championship. Can we stop dropping things from the ceiling, please? I felt for Malakai Black in getting the dual fire hose of blood. And that looked like it looked like he was supposed to stand in between the streams, but he said that he thought, oh, it doesn't look real enough, so I'm going to take that shot. And it looked like it was a hard time, brother, when he stepped into one of the streams of that of the coagulant and the blood, or whatever they put in the fire hoses in those things to shoot them down. felt a little over the top, to be honest.
I think he could have sold it bigger. I think like a little like whizzle wazzle whizzle, wah, like, you know, sort of sell would have been.
The Carrie prom scene didn't have this much blood in it.
Yeah, well,
the Mask of the Red Death didn't have this much blood in it.
Here's the
thing.
The
Corbin version.
Right. No, here's the thing though about Adam Copeland. He was in The Brood.
Shut up. Yes, and that's the point. Who do you have winning this? Because I have Malachi Black winning this and Adam Copeland going to the dark side. Oh, actually, no. I'll have Copeland win because he just got the TNT title, but he's still turning in some way.
Yeah.
What have I done? I've gone too far. Oh, he starts looking at his hands. And
yeah, he might use bloodening on Malachi Black during the match, and that's how he wins. But then he realizes that once you use the bloodening, then you have to sacrifice part of your soul. And then he slowly becomes, anyways, like, so he'll win, but he'll lose. It's like a Pyrrhic victory. I think that's what happens.
Yeah. John Moxley versus Konosuke Takeshita in an IWGP World Heavyweight Title Eliminator match. Takeshita wins. He'll receive a future IWGP World Title match, no matter who the holder of the title is. I opined last night, I thought maybe Takeshita wins this, but apparently there might be some politics involved with DDT. Takeshita had some comments earlier last week that we didn't have a chance to get to, but he has been kind of depressed, and it's felt like he's not having fun anymore in this turn with AEW. And that's a shame, because if they would just make Don Callis more serious and make him Gary Hart to Takeshita's Muda, we'd all be much better off. But I have Moxley winning this. Who do you have?
I have Moxley winning this, too. I'm with you on Takeshita. It's like you look at the guy and you could see how with just a simpler presentation that, I don't know, like, I one, accented his talent, but also, two, I think accented his more natural good looks rather than always having him wear these, like, sort of goofy costumes and stuff.
Hammer pants.
Yeah, right? Like, he's always wearing this weird crap, and, like, he's like, you know, one of the better looking guys on the roster or whatever. And it just seems like they're always costuming him in ways that does not do him a service.
The problem is they should be costuming him like Okada, but you can't because there can only be one Okada on the roster.
Yeah, also true. So, I mean, like, that's maybe the other part of Takeshita's frustrations here is he's looking at the roster and going, like, I'm clearly at the ceiling right now. They're not going to push me beyond Okada, and they haven't finished doing what they're doing with Okada right now. So what is the game plan for me?
Yeah. Trent Barretta versus Orange Cassidy in a, quote, straight-up singles match. I expect Barretta to win this one. To lead to some sort of gimmick match or something later.
Yeah, Barretta wins this one. He cheats. It leads to a gimmick match.
Yeah. And I also think we're possibly getting Barretta joining the Callis family at the end of the night or sometime during the evening. But we'll get to that in a little bit. In a match where I will be taking a break and going to the restroom or getting snacks, Chris Jericho with Big Bill versus Hook versus Katsuyori Shibata.
Oh, I just can't get enough of this performance between Taz and Chris Jericho every week. It's one of the things that makes me more and more emotionally invested in the angle because of the not ironic performance of Chris Jericho, coupled with the excellent reaction work by Taz. You know, the umbrage about the acronym around FTW is convicted and heartfelt, and you can really hear a father's love for his son coming out in this man's voice. Honestly, it's a little bit melancholic for me to listen to the commentary during these matches. Sometimes I have to put it on mute because it tugs at my heartstrings a little bit and I can't focus on the action in the ring. I want to commend Taz for his top-notch work throughout this feud, and I hope that we keep it up.
I just can't believe that we're doing a story where the Bucks are hiring people to beat people up, a bounty hunter story. We have a guy with a bounty hunter gimmick, and we can't hire the bounty hunter to go get the bounty. We have to hire Satnam Singh. I'm just like, what did this dude ever do wrong to deserve this kind of treatment? Just go with his gimmick and make him more serious, and then you can beat him a few times. He's never captured a bounty. He's a bounty.
I know. Well, even why is he in this match with Katsuyori Shibata and Hook? Like, if anything, this guy and his presentation only brings down Hook and Shibata by being in this match.
Yeah, I agree. Bang Bang Gang versus Death Triangle in a trios match for the Unified World Trios Championship.
Let me tell you something. These guys don't get enough TV time.
Who, the Bang Bang Gang or the Death Triangle?
No, the Bang Bang Gang. I think Jay White and Colton and Austin are just crushing it every time they're on screen.
Oh, God. They've done nothing with the guns. Jay White did a babyface promo last night. Guns up, everybody. Who's my gold members? You know, it's like, and then you have Ray and Penta are going to do a Ray and Penta match. And, you know, hang on for dear life, and then one of them's losing. That's what I have, I think.
Yeah, no, I think Death Triangle loses.
Titles. I don't think, I mean, maybe. But why would Death Triangle, I mean, they've already had the Trios titles before.
No, that's what I mean. They're going to lose. I think the Bang Bang Gang retain. Again, just more top-notch work. Can't get enough of these guys.
Willow Nightingale versus Mercedes Moné for the TBS title.
Did the video package recapturing the injury to Mercedes Moné really, if anything, the more you understand the injury, I feel like the less interested you are in this particular match as like a precipitating event.
I am not interested in the match per se. I'm interested in to see how Mercedes and Willow work because it's Mercedes' first match, but everything about this screams Chris Statlander angle. And that makes me not want to watch the match and just get to the point of the match, which is the Statlander angle where she turns on Willow and maybe her and Trent go with Callis and then Stokely goes with Mercedes. I think that's maybe how it's going to end.
I was going to say that, or maybe Statlander and Mercedes end up aligning.
That could be it too.
But yeah, like
it feels like they're keeping Trent and Statlander together. So
okay, so yeah, maybe they both just defect. I mean,
yeah, it's one of those things where I want to really look forward to this match, and I wish it were just one on one and clean. And I fully expect them to belt Mercedes here.
Yeah, no, I mean they have to, right? Like if you don't belt Mercedes,
I don't
she's
know,
really,
maybe you don't.
She's really dead in the water if you don't belt her now, though.
I agree, but Willow's your hottest female star right now.
I agree with that too.
This is a corner I don't envy anybody in.
I mean, because it's not like if you belt Mercedes, there's a really clear storyline coming out of this either, because the focus is still going to be on Statlander and Willow Nightingale, and like, who are we going to want? This is a mess. It's a really bad launch for Mercedes Moné. It's a notably bad launch.
Yeah. Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana versus Christian Cage with Kill Switch, maybe, although his leg is rumored to be okay. I thought he took a terrible spill. Nick Wayne and Mother Wayne. Boy, it was really good to do that blow-off Swerve-Nick Wayne match on the go-home show. Really, I mean, where Swerve apologizes before kicking him in the head. I did like the failed concerto, and I liked the scene with Nana blocking the escape. We're not going to dance around whether or not Nana's turning with Brian Cage and company. Yeah. We're just going to go full on babyface, which is fine.
Fine, yeah, that's fine. I like that they made a decision on this. It's fine. They made a decision. He's a face. Great. Good. The if anything, committing to trying to commit to Swerve Strickland as a face is good. Now, that being said, I'm sorry, and then kicking someone directly in the head. Okay.
And then to end the show, Strickland's winning this. There's no way Christian Cage gets this title.
That'd be hilarious, but no.
I think it'd be great, but no.
Yeah. Like I'm almost kind of here for that, but no.
And then finally, Anarchy in the Arena, the Elite of Okada, Jack Perry, who's the best heel in this company right now, and the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson, versus Team AEW, Brian Danielson, Darby Allin, and FTR, Cash Wheeler, and Dax Harwood. Darby Allin came back after being banned from the arena, driven in an SUV by one Anthony Khan, and had a flamethrower. Tony Khan has now approved military-grade technology to be in AEW. Chris, Does a table get set on fire or does Tony Khan get set on fire? Because I'm kind of here for a stuntman dressed as Tony Khan to take a bump while on fire.
That would be hilarious. No, Tony Khan lights himself on fire and spears someone while the flaming Tony Khan spear both the Young Bucks.
He gets his revenge.
What better? He loads himself into a cannon, lights himself on fire, and shoots it. Yeah, with the they actually flamethrow a ring, like a ring in the sky. Khan shoots himself through that, right? And he incinerates and then spears the Bucks, rolls out of the ring. Darby Allin comes in for the cover with a fire retardant blanket, of course. 1, 2, 3.
And says, that's cinema. And then we go to Bucks.
No. One better. He goes, bah, 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 that's all, folks. And then the ring zooms in and we get AEW comes in on the bottom.
I think there's a flaming table spot. And I think Darby's going through it, but God help me. I get this. Chris, I have this nagging feeling Tony Khan may join the Elite.
Oh my God! He goes Eric
and pull
Bischoff.
The Bischoff.
He's
just
gonna
to,
pull
just
the
to
Bischoff.
Show him how to do Bischoff better than Bischoff did.
Oh, that'd be funny because Bischoff is actually good at being Bischoff for a while. No, like Bischoff actually understood exactly what that schmarmy character needed to be. He was so hateable back. Yeah, and Tony Khan, the thing about Tony Khan that's ironic is the things that are hateable are things that he does as a baby face, and he won't know how to capture the essence of them as a heel. Like, he will struggle to find his heeldom because he'll want to be like a hammy jerky thing instead of the thing about him that's actually kind of annoying and tedious. I think obviously Team Evil wins this, and I don't know if Tony turns heel yet and joins the Bucks. I think this might remain Tony Khan tries to fight the Bucks at least for a while more.
Yeah.
But I do think you're right. Tony Khan won't be able to resist the temptation of going heel because now that he's inserted himself on camera, he's going to need to be both babyface and heel at some point during this run.
Now I can show my range.
Oh, absolutely. The man can do comedy and drama.
I have Team Elite winning this.
Team Elite, Team Evil.
Yep. And then it gets resolved in a blood and guts match eventually. Somehow.
Yeah, this is the Empire Strikes Back. They're gonna win.
And that'll do it for AEW. Unless you have something else in Dynamite you wanted to go over that was pressing at you.
No, I mean everything that is relevant. I mean they're doing 13 matches on this card. How could they not be encapsulated in Dynamite in some way?
Only 10 so far, so we're good.
Harley Quinn didn't have a match on this. Harley Cameron
did it. Well, she had a match on Wednesday, and it's been 3 weeks of Harley Cameron, which is
there. You go.
We have 30 women on this roster, and
she didn't have a match on this show, which is crazy.
I actually enjoyed Satnam Singh versus Bryan Danielson. I wouldn't say it was a great match, but I enjoyed it.
No, so Mike, it's not that it was a bad. Like I actually liked Satnam Singh. And it was just fun to see something different, but. As a go-home segment for this
right.
Was absolutely idiotic. And, like, it was, as I said, Chekhov's Jeff Jarrett. He was not introduced at any point earlier in this. He's never been, he's just never really been teased as being relevant to this in any meaningful way. And you have Brian Keith there as the bounty hunter. I thought this whole thing was a bit silly.
I only have one NXT note. Because a lot of it was so ridiculous to me. Lola Vice turned on Shayna Baszler so she could shake her ass. Okay. And that's going to set up a NXT Underground match. A mixed martial arts match. She head kicked Shayna after Shayna forgave her and then just clapped her cheeks. Over the body. I don't understand.
Look, it didn't make sense, Jeff, but I like where we got.
anything else? Because I have nothing.
No, I mean, honestly, it's like the Lola Vice thing was goofy. Dante Chen being reintroduced to defeat Lexus King was a choice. I don't mind
with Mr. Stone.
I don't mind Mr. Stone's babyface character and even having him have little storylines that are mostly driven backstage as just like kind of a change of pace sort of television storyline thing. I have no problem with that. I just think Dante Chen's a boring guy to do this with.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and then Gallus and the Gallus boys, you're right. It only took 1 week for them to be boring again. It does not matter that Joe Coffey has a new extremely twisty curly Q mustache that he is sporting. I'm actually still bored.
It's what we call character work. Let's end it there. Enjoy the wrestling this weekend. Enjoy your long weekend. And remember the fallen. It's Memorial Day. You can follow me on X, no longer Twitter, at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on only Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. This is Shake Them Ropes. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes on X. I only do that when I upload an episode. But we are part of the Voices Wrestling podcasting family. Don't forget, hit the tip jar there on old Red Circle if you can. Listen to the other podcasts on here. They're pretty good. Good, Bad, The Hungy, The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, and of course The Flagship with Joe and Rich. I also do another show over on Fight Game Media called The Dynamite Show. We go live about 20 minutes after it goes off the air. Paul Fontaine and myself thoroughly deconstruct that week's Dynamite. Be seeing Paul this weekend in Las Vegas. If you're here, hey, hit me up on the DMs. I'll give you a firm handshake and a hello. Chris does other things like bother his neighbors. He's going to tell you about it now.
I do not, because I don't ever play electric instruments anymore. But I still teach music lessons. So if you're interested in learning guitar or music theory, bass, drums, I use my hands to teach at this point. Feel free to hit me up on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. You can see some photographs from the mountain. I got some lovely photographs from sunset last week. They're up there. The mountain is very lovely right now, so I'll probably have some more photographs during the summer here. And outside of that, keep reaching for the stars, people.
My name is Tyler Fornes, and I am one of the co-hosts of the Good, the Bad, and the Hungy AEW podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We take a broad scope approach to the world of All Elite Wrestling and the entire universe of Tony Khan. We talk about the big matches, the big stars, the promos, the storylines. And we also look at it from a big picture perspective. How are things going to change over the course of the next 10 years with AEW still in the picture? How are companies like WWE going to adapt and adjust to AEW? Are they going to be a similar way like they did with WCW in the late 1990s? Will there be a counterpunch? We talk about all of that and more on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy every week on the Voices of Wrestling Network.